seriously, anything you wanted, what would it be? She frowned, thinking, well, I would hope that you have a happy and fulfilled life. I mean stuff. Is there any kind of stuff you want? I looked at Dad. Same for you. Anything.
I'd agree with your mother and hope that you had a good life.
I have a good life, I thought, and I have over $50,000. Thanks, both of you, but hey, like I said, I mean stuff. For yourselves, isn't there anything you would want? They looked at each other and shrugged.
Not a thing, Mom said.
Me either.
Oh, come on. I mean, think about it. Anything, no matter the cost. There was a silence. Then my mom laughed. Oh, I know what you're doing. You've saved up some money from your lawn mowing business, and you want to help out. Isn't that it?
Well, sort of.
Oh. She smiled that soft mother smile.
That's very sweet, dear. But we... Who on earth is that?
She had been sitting facing the front window, which looks out across the lawn, which by this time, what with Pascal's efforts, was starting to look pretty good. He'd been so horrified by the condition of what he called the boss's lawn that he'd come by to recondition it. The change was a complete mystery to my parents, who made jokes about the lawn fairies who work on the grass when everybody is asleep. My parents were spending a lot of time relaxing in the evenings after work, admiring their miraculous lawn. My mother stood and walked to the window.
My goodness!
I looked and was stunned to see the old station wagon with Joey Powell sitting in the front seat, his head down, dozing.
Look at the size of the man. Why, he barely fits in the car.
Dad stood and went to the window.
The car looks kind of beat up. I wonder if he's all right.
He's all right. Believe me. It slipped out before I could stop it.
You know him?
Think fast. But I couldn't figure out how to explain how I had come to own the prize fighter in front of our house without a whole lot of details, and I also didn't want to lie to my folks. Well, sort of. I know him from the lawn jobs I've been doing. He's a good guy. I'll go out and see what he's doing here. I was out the door before they could say anything. Joey?
Yes?
What are you doing here?
I thought I'd spend the night here to make sure Rock's people don't find you.
Well, gosh, thanks, a lot. But Rock doesn't know my name or where I live. Speaking of that, how did you find me?
I followed you on your bicycle.
Oh. Well, look, I don't need any help right now. But thanks again. Besides, shouldn't you be getting sleep for training? When's your next fight?
6 days, next Saturday night. It's on the list they send sponsors.
I left the list at Arnold's. Oh, Joey, my parents don't know what I do at Arnold's and that I'm sponsoring you. Not yet, that is. I'll tell them, of course, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. I can't figure out a good way to tell them how everything happened, and they might not understand my involvement in, well, the fight game.
Don't you want to be my sponsor?
Oh, no, that's not it. I'm glad that, we're working together, especially after today, and thank you again for that.
No problem.
Is your fight next Saturday on television?
I think so. Can't you come to the arena, though? The sponsor should watch the fight in person.
It would be hard for me to get there, but I'll watch it on television. I really will. I'm rooting for you, Joey. I know you're going to win. I just feel it. Now go home and get some rest and concentrate on your training. You only have 6 days to get ready.
I still worry about Rock.
I'll be fine, really, and thanks for everything. He looked at me. I'll be fine. He nodded. And as I watched him drive away, I really believed it. Chapter 12. Team Management in Times of Uncertainty. The next day started out normal, or as normal as anything had been this summer. The rain had stopped and the grass dried. I rode my little mower over to Arnold's to check the notebooks to see where the jobs were. By now, the whole thing pretty much took care of itself. Everybody knew where to go, what to do. Well, I sighed, another day. Arnold nodded.
It's a good crew. They know what to do. It's the best kind of business. Everybody's happy. Everybody makes money and the lawns get good care. Speaking of knowing what to do, did you talk to your parents last night?
I tried, Arnold. I really did. But then Joey showed up and the opportunity was gone.
Joey showed up. What do you mean?
So I told him about Joey following me home and how difficult it became to talk to my parents about all the money things. I couldn't see just how to break it to them by explaining that I own a heavyweight prize fighter, so I figured I would maybe wait until tonight or this afternoon. It's Monday, and they both get off work today at noon. Arnold nodded.
All right, then, but for sure today. I'm really getting uncomfortable about keeping secrets from them, and I want your parents to set up a proper account for you.
Today, for sure.
What are you going to do now?
The Beckwith lawn. I might as well take my mower over there, keep my hand in. I worked for 2 solid hours and only had half the lawn done before I needed to refuel. I'd started to put gas in the mower when I remembered my cell phone. Arnold had bought a bunch of phones and given one to each of the crews and to me so that we could keep in touch throughout the day. It bothered me that I had the thing in a belt holster while messing with gas after I'd seen something on television about how cell phones might spark and blow things up. So I took it out of the belt holster and was just setting it on the ground when it went off. I had it set on vibrate so I could feel it, because with that old mower there was no way I could hear it. The vibration scared me so much I dropped it. I grabbed it. The call was from Arnold. Hi, what's up?
It might be best for you to head home right now.
His voice sounded clipped and unnatural.
What? Home. It would be good for you to head home.
You mean your place or my home?
Yes, right. Head for home. Now.
And then nothing. I looked around, half expecting to see something that would explain what I just heard. Nothing, of course. I went over Arnold's words again, trying to remember. I dialed his number. It rang and rang.
This is Arnold. Please leave a message.
I started to leave one, then decided not to. Something was very definitely wrong. He had said head for home. I looked at my watch. Nobody would be there for an hour. Why head home? Why not go to his house? And why had he cut off so abruptly? Rock. It must have something to do with him, but Joey Powell had pretty much taken care of that. Maybe not. Maybe Rock had come back and followed some of the men to Arnold's house and figured out that Arnold kind of ran the show. And then they came this morning. And what? I had to go see, but carefully. I parked the mower and ran the 4 long blocks to Arnold's. I stopped across the street in back of the Jameson's hedge and studied Arnold's house. His Toyota was there as usual. Things seemed normal. Nothing was moving on the porch or in any of the windows that I could see. I watched for what seemed like an hour, but it was probably only 15 minutes or so. I tried to slow my breathing down from the run over, and I clenched my hands into fists to stop the shaking. I finally decided to walk up to the house and check it out, and it started to creep out of the hedge when I saw it. Behind the curtain on the living room window, a man's head appeared. Just for a second, the curtain shifted, and I saw him. I moved back behind the hedge. Rock, either him or his identical twin. So, Rock was there. Probably with some of his men, and they must have Arnold. So, now what? They had Arnold, and they wanted... what? They wanted money. More money than before, for sure, but what else? They wanted me? Wanted me to get the money? With a jolt, I realized there was nothing I could do. Pascal turned his cell off during the day so he could sleep, and even if I could get to some of the sites and get the men, they might not be able to help. I could call the police. I had a cell, 3 numbers, 911. But I didn't. Would anyone believe me? A 12-year-old kid calls the police and says he's running a huge business and somebody's taken over the house of a stockbroker? No problem. We'll be right over. We just have to pick up the Tooth Fairy and Superman and we'll get right on it. My heart sank even further when it hit me that I had no way to get in touch with Joey either, who would have been my best ally. All the paperwork about him was still in Arnold's house. I didn't know his address or phone number or even where the fight was going to be on Saturday. Everything was in the house. Where Rock was, either alone with Arnold or with more of his men. I needed help. Now. I needed somebody smart who could think outside the box and help me figure out what to do about Rock and Arnold. Somebody with a good brain who would truly want to help me. I needed my parents. Chapter 13. Expertise
its utilization and effects on economy. I ran the whole way home and saw the car in the driveway. I burst into the house. They were in the kitchen with Grandma. "Oh, hi, Pumpkin," Mom said. "Would you like some lunch?" On the run over, I had decided I would tell them everything. "Mom, Dad, Grandma, please sit down on the couch."
"How about lunch first?"
Dad held up a knife covered with mayo. "No time, no time, please, now." Mom said, "You've been acting so strange lately."
"It's puberty," Grandma said. "He's becoming a man. Men act strange from time to time, and I'm worried about what the hole in the ozone layer is doing to the plants and the rainforest."
"You know that guy who was sitting in the car yesterday?" I shook off the image Grandma had put in my mind and refocused on the situation at hand.
"The big guy?"
"Yeah, that's him. His name is Joseph Powdermilk. He's a professional boxer, a prize fighter. His next fight is Saturday night, and if he wins, I get half his winnings." "What on earth are you talking about?" Mom asked.
"Why do you get half his earnings?"
Dad frowned.
"Why should he give you anything?"
"Because I bought his contract and I sponsor him." They sat down. "I mean, Arnold, my stockbroker, bought the contract for me."
"Arnold?"
Dad asked. "You have a stockbroker?" Mom whispered.
"His own boxer!"
Grandma beamed. So I told him the whole story, fast. They nodded, sometimes shook their heads, then nodded more, listening, always listening, and I kept going, explaining Joey Powell and finally Rock and his gang. When I'd finished, I took a deep breath. "And I think they're in Arnold's house now, holding him prisoner. No, I know they're in there because I saw them, and I don't know what to do." Dad stood.
"Call the police."
At first, I thought of that, but nobody would believe me anyway, even if I could call them.
"But with your parents with you, they would listen." "What do you mean, at first, and why couldn't you call them?"
"He means," my mother chimed in, "that it's difficult to go to the police because some of his employees are poor people who really need the money, and if the authorities come into it, perhaps they'll find the workers aren't all documented the way they should be. Is that it, Pumpkin?" I nodded. "Thanks, Mom. I know we should call the police, but I was hoping there might be some other way, that you guys might be able to think up a way to solve this." I let it hang there. They were the smartest people I knew. If they couldn't come up with something, nobody could. Dad said,
"We go to your strength."
"I don't think I have one."
"Sure you do, literally. You know a prize fighter."
"But I don't know how to find him." "Now," Mom said, "the thinking comes in." It took her just 3 minutes on the internet and 2 phone calls before I heard Joey's voice on the other end of the line. Meanwhile, I was shaking Grandma off because she wanted to say hello to him. "Joey, it's me."
"The sponsor?"
"Yes, Rock and his men are at Arnold's house holding him prisoner, I think for money, and I can't call the police because a lot of the workers will get in trouble." I heard the phone click, and Joey was gone before I finished speaking. I hung up and turned to my parents. "Let's get over there."
"I call shotgun,"
Grandma said as we scrambled to the car. Chapter 14. Resource Utilization, Its Causes and Effects. At Arnold's, we parked behind Joey's station wagon just as he was stepping out of the driver's side. "Shouldn't we help in some way?" Mom asked, until she saw him standing. "On second thought, Joey can handle it, but we're going with him." I got out of the car. No matter what happened, Arnold might need help either during or after. I started walking toward the house, Mom and Dad with me, Grandma brought up the rear. I knew, or thought I knew, what was coming. Joey had gone into the porch slowly, closing the screen door quietly behind him. By that time, we were close to the house. If the front door was locked, it didn't slow him down. He hit it with his shoulder, took it off its hinges, and was out of sight. There was a muffled thumping sound. Oh, no, Rocker's men might have a gun. Later, I found it was just the sound of one of the men having his head jammed into a dishwasher without opening the door on the washer. After the thumping, there was a second or two of silence, followed by a scream, and one of the men was thrown out the front door so hard he took the porch screen off its hinges and was propelled into the yard, riding the screen on his hands and knees like it was a bodyboard, until he hit the elm next to the walkway. The elm was probably 100 years old, very big, and didn't give a millimeter when the man plowed into it face first. A few seconds later, Joey came out with Rock in his right hand and another man in his left, carrying them like cats by the backs of their necks.
The first man was still in the kitchen, jammed into the dishwasher. Later, I found out that Rock and three others had been in the kitchen with Arnold tied to a chair. They thought Arnold had told me to come to his place, and they'd been planning to force me to give them money when I came.
"I told you," Joey said, "to leave the sponsor alone, or I would pinch your head."
"Please, Mr. Powdermilk." Mom was standing by the sidewalk, a half-horrified, half-admiring expression on her face. "Couldn't you just give them a stern talking to?"
"Yes, but I did that before when they made trouble the first time. I told them that I would pinch their heads if they came back. They came back anyway. Talking to them again won't help. Pinching their heads will."
Grandma was nodding.
"I won't come back," Rock said. "I promise this time, I really do. You don't have to pinch my head, really. I'll do what you say."
"See, Mr. Powdermilk," Mom nodded. "I think he means it." Joey stared at Rock in one hand, then studied the man in his other hand. He peered over at my father, who shrugged and said,
"He seems to be telling the truth."
Then Joey turned to Grandma, who said,
"Probably not the best move, young man, although personally I'd like to see you pound the snot out of him."
Joey sighed and looked back at my mother.
"If you really don't want me to,"
she shuddered, "I would really rather you didn't."
"All right, but if they come back, I'll have to take care of things my way."
"I understand, and they understand, don't you?" Both men nodded enthusiastically. "Then please let them go, Mr. Powdermilk," Mom said. He dropped them, and it was like watching those cartoon scenes where a dog or cat is held off the ground and his legs start moving faster and faster until he's dropped and he shoots away. They disappeared in half a second. We all went into the kitchen and found Arnold tied up but not gagged. I introduced him to my parents and Grandma while we untied him. The man slumped against the dishwasher was regaining consciousness. Joey picked him up by the neck and threw him the length of the hallway and out the front door. Arnold was none the worse for wear and made a pitcher of his specialized tea for us. We all had a glass while Arnold explained how he wanted to set up my account with Mom and Dad, and Grandma asked if Arnold could find her a boxer to sponsor too. Then my mother held her glass up and said, I think, a line from Shakespeare. "All's well that ends well." Except that wasn't the end. Chapter 15. Serendipitous Activity and Its Effect on Capital Quantity. We all went to the fight Saturday night. It was a huge auditorium with a ring in the middle and a bunch of fat men smoking cigars that smelled like dog poop when a hot mower blade hits it. Women with not a lot of clothes on were hanging on to the men. Because I was a sponsor, I had ringside seats for Arnold and my family, and when we arrived, it was pretty exciting. Joey came out in a big red robe, followed by his manager in a red T-shirt. He took off the robe and pumped his arms in the air. He had on red trunks. The ring announcer introduced the fighters, and we cheered like crazy. Grandma blew kisses, which made Joey blush and look away. The other man wore green. When the bell rang, the fighters came out of their corners and took a stance in the middle like they were going to box, only they didn't. The man in green swung at Joey, and Joey ducked a little and used his right to hit the other guy so hard it sounded like somebody had slammed a melon with an axe. The other boxer slid backward, already out cold, until he hit the ropes, then slithered between the bottom rope and the mat and out of the ring to land in the lap of a fat man smoking a cigar. We all jumped up, screaming, "Joey! Joey! Joey Pow!" He waved a glove at us. The fight lasted 4.5 seconds. That was it. The purse was $5,000, and I was due for half. Wow. This was just the start for Joey. He was going to have many more fights. When I went to bed that night, I had a dream about him doing a whole bunch of 4.5-second fights until he became world champion. It was a great dream, in color, with Joey wearing the red trunks for luck and with a lot of action, and because it had been such a late night at the fight, I slept hard. When the phone by my bed woke me up the next morning, I was still in the dream.
"It's me," Arnold said. "We have a new development."
"Don't worry. As long as he keeps wearing red trunks, we're bound to win."
"What?"
The dream was hard to shake.
"As long as he keeps wearing red trunks, wake up. It's me, Arnold."
"Oh," I shook my head, scattered the dream. "All right, so what's the problem?"
"It's not a problem. You remember the walleye stock?"
"Sure, the one that made me rich."
"That's the one. Well, I put in the sell order back when I said I did, and the record said it sold for $4 a share, and you came up with $48,000.
And change.
Yes, and change. Except the sell order didn't go through like the computer said it did, and the stocks didn't change hands the way they're supposed to. Some kind of technical foul-up. So for all of this week, you have still owned Walleye stock. In fact, you still do. And there have been some massive shifts in the value.
Even half awake, I could feel a sinking in the center of my stomach. How much, I said, though I didn't want to know really, did we lose?
Oh, my, no. The stock didn't go down. It went up.
Up?
Yes. There was a secondary merger of some stature, and a larger software company took the whole thing over. They're always doing things like that, these high-risk software stocks. I remember when...
Arnold, how much?
Oh, well, the merger triggered more interest, so the stock jumped to $40 a share. You have 12,000 shares at $40 a share.
Numbers. More numbers. 12 times 4, 48, no, not 48, but $480,000?
Yes, of course, there'll be fees and commissions and the like, but still, it should be just a little under that figure. Now, listen, please, it's Sunday, and the market is closed, but I heartily recommend that tomorrow morning when it opens, we sell the stock and put the money in something solid and long-term.
I didn't faint. This time, I didn't faint. But I did hang up, and I got out of bed and went down into the kitchen where Mom and Dad and Grandma were making a late breakfast. And without thinking about telling them to sit down, I gave them Arnold's news and found there must be a weak male gene in our family because Dad fainted. We put him on the couch.
He's coming around!
Grandma patted his hand. She turned to me.
You know, dear, Grandpa always said, take care of your tools and they'll take care of you.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Lawn Boy by Gary Paulson. Copyright 2007 by Gary Paulson. Read by Tom Parks. Directed by Colleen Willits and engineered by Corey Young. Performance copyright 2009 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.